This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Jim. A few days ago, Carl Pfeiffer, John McEdward, and myself went out into the field and recorded, shot, edited, scored two videos for the Euphemet Patreon. Patrons can see this video at patreon.com/euphemet. What you'll hear now is the audio version of this video. This is a thank you to the patrons who have supported this show for so very long, and we hope you enjoyed this experiment. Liminality is the in-between, a space in which, unmapped, becomes a place of obsession and lore, a memory of one small crack on a sphere, its own surface refusing to be made flat. Without distortion, once a plane, now merely a projection of the unknown. I'm Jim Perry, and this is In Liminal. Conversation somewhere in between. Some may know my friend Garrett Kelly as the kindly creator of Liminal Earth, this crowdsourced digital map of amazing experiences. But what some don't know is he's an absolute wild genius when it comes to developing new technology for paranormal experiments. DIY, very strange, artful. His designs, thoughts, and aims are for an open-source paranormal world, and I've been invited into his lab to experience it for myself. You know, this experience is really interesting, and I'm glad you're the first one that I'm trying this out with, because it's a new thing. It's a new territory, and it's been an entire day. No, I mean, longer than that, a day of, like, sort of getting here, mm-hmm. of assembling the gear, of assembling Carl and John, mm-hmm. assembling what we were going to do. The pandemic in some ways was a lot easier, my friend.
Right, right.
Since we're all back out in the world now, how do you feel like that has affected your work in phenomenology, in studying and playing with the phenomenon? Is it different now than when we were all kind of shut off and shut away?
For me, it's not much different because I'm still like a hermit and I'm not quite out in the world as much anyways. I mean, ever since I moved out here too, I'm kind of sheltered. So I'm not doing stuff in person as much even. But we have been doing the WUFO thing for over a year now that came out of the pandemic. So in that way, I mean, that's still continuing doing that online way of doing like group seance-y kind of things. I mean, some ways I'm still in that pandemic mindset, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think you're ever going to break out of that like specific mindset, or do you think that's just the new reality?
I mean,
you've crossed into something else here.
I like the hermit vibes. I like being in my little basement and I don't know. I think got rid of all the FOMO of.
Yeah. What did you were going on with something? What did you realize? You think?
What did I realize?
Yeah.
Um, I don't know.
That it was okay to like be in your space or something, yeah, right? Yeah. Is that it? Like when like, you were in Seattle, just, like you were,
I mean, I was
there was
very,
pressure yeah. and there was, it was yeah. a social element. You had a radio station mm-hmm. and of course,
DJs
like,
in yeah. my house, like
DJs
all the time.
DJs in your house? Yeah. yeah.
Lars Ulrich's dad, Torben Ulrich, you know him? Uh-huh. Drummer Metallica's yeah. dad. He was in my house one time.
What?
Because we were doing the radio and I came downstairs and there's this like wizard with this long beard, yeah. you know, people making breakfast at our house. I'm like, yeah. I mean, that was cool.
Yeah.
But it was also funk bands at 10 a.m. Yeah. or yeah. whatever, too, to wake me up. So
those are the kind of things that push you out of a city
right.
into small peninsulas.
Now we're just in a quiet spot and I like being yeah. at home with my family and,
yep.
you know, I'll do weird stuff on the internet. But yeah, I go yeah. out, you know, I go out in this natural area around here. So
yeah.
I can do that kind of stuff. And actually, in the pandemic, I was feeling a little bit like everyone was feeling weird, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I was watching TikTok and I decided to go make a TikTok. And that became a whole thing of like.
You killed TikTok yeah. in a way that I can't even imagine my brain trying to manage.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys tried to help me with it and I just like couldn't,
yeah.
I like couldn't keep up. It's like something that you have to have a very unique energy for, I think, mm-hmm. or just be younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was an awakening for me. Like, yeah, maybe it's okay that I'm not on this platform too. Maybe
right.
I'm an Instagram guy and that's okay. I feel the same way. I think that we learned a lot about ourselves during that time. Some of us experimented and tested out what life could be afterwards. But I think I've had like a hard time figuring out what those next steps are and being a person in real life again
mm-hmm.
in a weird way. I'm different than I was before.
Mm-hmm.
I really am. And it's hard to come to that realization that you realize that you've changed and you changed very quickly.
Yeah.
And not to say that it's a positive thing or a negative thing. I think it's just a thing. And I think a lot of people are still kind of going through that. And it reminds me of the closest thing I can compare it to within context of my life is a paranormal experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's an experience of seeing something that you have no fucking idea why that happened or how it could have even happened. And oh my God, am I going crazy?
Right.
To now your life has changed because it did happen to you. That's the only thing I can compare it to, like
mm-hmm.
the whole experience and coming out the other side. And I mean, it makes me think of you a lot and your work in liminality.
Mm-hmm.
And because you kind of love that space, like that's the space you kind of like
right.
building myths around and worlds and inviting people to participate in.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose like, I don't know, what's your perspective on that?
It reminds me of this time, like there was a snowstorm in Seattle and the bus stuck and
yeah.
It was like, oh, you know, just like interrupts everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got really, I do like thrive in that time when
uh-huh.
everything, like, you know, it's like this, like, what now kind
yeah.
of time, you know, like that is exciting. I mean, the COVID was fucked up.
Yeah. right.
was,
yeah, yeah.
I'm not, there's, it's horrible. I'm
yeah,
not like
not
thankful
trying, yeah,
to go
exactly.
back to
we're
COVID
not,
or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We're not, the good old days.
but
yeah.
I do like it didn't impact me a lot, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like I kind of did like find internal things and staying at home and like different, I was okay with that change, you
yeah.
know, and I realized I did like aspects of being, not going out and being a social. I think I get drained when I'm around a lot of people.
Yeah.
I like people. I really love other people, but I was doing all these shows and stuff and I just feel like my energy gets zapped. So I kind of liked that time. Especially like my own personal time to be internal. So
yeah,
I don't know.
When we did that Euphemet feature on you, it was right before all that stuff kicked off. And it was sort of like the last breath of, you know, modern normalcy right then.
Mm-hmm.
And you were already on that trip of sinking back into something a little bit more distant. A little bit away from people. You moved out here. And a lot of what that episode of yours, I think, was, and that feature was the narrative. The narrative was, you know, you're being pushed out of the city, but you're also embracing that and you're creating something new out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking something like Liminal Earth and the map and you're you're helping others remythologize their areas, such as you did here in mm-hmm. this place. What do you think is like, if this was like a straight up, you know, this is them now kind of a kind of thing, I guess, you know, and of course you've been on Night Drift and stuff since then. What are some of the things that you think have changed about you from that time?
Well, let me think. I mean, I really have gotten into that whole remythologizing the landscape thing. Like, I think that moving to Bremerton is almost like a test case for that. Like, mm-hmm. learning the history of this place that you're in. Because, you know, a lot of people who grew up here, they're kind of over it. But I'm, like, excited. Like, what, you know, that's L. Ron Hubbard's house? Or, what, you know, like, yeah. like, I'm excited about all the little details and finding things that people have forgotten. And I think, you know, doing TikTok during the pandemic, like, I found out there's that park that's behind my house over here that's been abandoned for 15 years. And then there's like, and so I started filming that, talking about that. And then the neighbor said, oh, I saw a raccoon go down the slide. And I was like, what? So I like put a trail cam in there and I continue to like invest in this park that's just empty. Mm-hmm. And then I made this TikTok at the same park where I had people come there in their dreams and try to find an object that was in the park. And then, like, that blew up. All these people were having dreams about this park and saying they saw my shadow self there and all kinds of stuff. And then, like, the city council, I tried to pitch the city council that should be a dream park and that should be, like, what that park is used for now. Uh-huh. Like, people just go there in their dreams and uh-huh. it's, like, a silent park. But it's like that kernel of, like, just, like, I heard there's an abandoned park. Now it's a raccoon park. Now it's a dream park. Now it's maybe a sanctioned city dream park. You know, it's just like re-mythologizing and like building on a place or a little kernel of a weird story about a place.
Yeah.
And just building myths kind of around that and mm-hmm. like magic.
Yeah.
I'm really into that and like finding ways that it's almost LARPing, but like it kind of borders on real or not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm really yeah. into that little. I know sometimes it's like just play or like yeah. imagination.
Yeah.
But it's like sometimes, like when you're in that mode, weird things do happen. Yeah. You know, like the whole Philip experiment yeah, kind yeah. of thing, you know.
Lapping.
LARPing. Like live.
No, we'll call it lapping. Live action paranormal play.
I like this. So we'll call it. I'm going to use that. Lapping.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you talk about. Well, yeah, tell me a little bit about this, because this like kind of
this stuff
dips into what you're saying about you're not just like sort of now remythologizing places, but you're remythologizing, biology items.
Yeah.
You're making potions and stuff now.
Yeah, this is Jeremy and I are working on this stuff. Jeremy does the map with me as well. Yeah, this is some beaver spit.
Can I pick this up?
Yeah. He collected, there's a beaver near his house that felled a tree, and there's like all the little wood chips, and he's like, whoa, well, that definitely has a beaver spit on it. So like maybe we could use this for like a spell, you know, about, you know, beavers are like re-mythology. They're kind of like re-changing the landscape or whatever. And like,
oh, interesting.
You know, so there's like spells you could do around like reshaping and,
oh, you know. Interesting. And since, like, naturally, like, within their ecosystem, they're already doing that.
Yeah.
You're kind of using that energy, but you're kind of, like, hijacking their mystical.
I know.
You're rejecting their biological process for mystical purposes.
Yeah, duh.
So the beavers are, like, a divination tool.
Right, yeah.
Man.
Totally, yeah.
That's wild. And then you told me that there's like some sort of introduction to AI within this process.
Well, that actually, you know, we asked AI, ChatGPT specifically, we said, uh-huh. hey, we have some beaver spit. Can you help us write a spell that has to do with beaver spit? You know, and it's, I think that kind of purpose is like, we've been finding good results through that, you know, kind really? Of as almost like a sounding board. And like,
what are some of the results that you've been finding? What's an instance?
Well, I've been telling, I think I told you about, I had this idea for like summoning spirits in a parking lot. That's mm-hmm. one. So I was like, Because I'm just thinking about like that dream park, you know, it's like, this is a park that's been sitting there for 15 years empty. It is totally liminal. Like there's, it has no idea what it wants to be. It's just sitting there as a square that has no purpose.
Yeah.
And so like, can we enchant that? And so I was thinking about that and I was like, oh, there's all these parking lots.
Yeah.
And like, what if we tried to, you know, like kind of invent or like, summon whatever you want to, some kind of parking lot spirit. And so I put these ideas into ChatGPT, like, hey, I want to do this. Like, what's some divination methods so we could do that? And, you know, it's like tarot cards and, you know, like pendulums. I'm like, wait, imagine you don't have any of that stuff. You're just in the parking lot. What could you do? And it came up with this idea for license plate bibliomancy.
Okay, so you asked AI, you asked ChatGPT.
Yeah.
What can you do in this parking lot? Because you didn't want to include tarot or other popular methods. And then it responds to you.
Yeah. And it says, why you could do this license plate bibliomancy where like the letters have to do with like an attribute of the thing you're talking to. And then like if it's a number after that, it's the power level of that attribute. So like,
what?
So like L might be like a lover, but it'd be a one. The next letter would be a one, so it's like a low. Which means not a lover.
Bad lover.
Yeah.
One night stand. Right. Not recommended. It got weird. Yeah.
So I was just like, whoa. I mean, maybe I would have came up with that, but it's so cool that it's like, here are these elements, and like it kind of put things together. Like, oh, we can do this. It said like you could use the cracks in the ground to like. You know, it gave me like a table. Like we worked for a while, but it made me like a table of like, if you see a crack in the asphalt that's like a Y, that means this.
And
if it's like an L shape, it means this. I've been building all these things and kind of, you know, it's not always great, but if you keep talking to it and like going down the rabbit hole with it.
Do you feel there was a time where, you know, wizards, for example, mystic men or women or individuals who that was their job was providing some sort of mystical process for people to navigate through the world, right? Do you feel you're kind of doing the same thing here? Because they also had like sort of sigils with sticks and symbols that would occur or using natural elements in this way. Just so happens that you're using this different function that is technology to really kind of give people, I mean, it's an oracle process really, right? It's like more of an oracle process in what you're doing. And what do you think like some of the, what's some of the value in it, you think? Could you imagine someone like going into a parking lot at a Dollar Tree and with an idea of what they wanted to maybe gain from whatever that is, and instead of like drawing a deck, like pulling three cards, they did something like this?
I don't know. I don't know the purpose of it. I just like doing it.
That's what this gets into, though, right? It's like kind of the belief of this. And that if you lean into some of these process, people like yourself have experienced results of things lining up sometimes.
Right?
And so that leads you to believe that the more processes you make in this way, like using these things to like divine some information, has the ability, if you believe into it and you put that energy into it, to potentially also work as well.
Yeah, and I don't know how it works or what. Right. I don't know the mechanism, but it seems like it does. So I just want to keep, I want like tons of pareidolia machines, like of, and not always technology, but things that generate like weird things and then you connect them and like blow your mind.
Right.
Like I want things that do that. You know, like the spirit box is one of those things where people hear like random things and then they make connections and they tell a story afterwards. And I want more things like that. Like the florophone is the plant talker thing is where the plant, so you know, like that is just, it's like another pareidolia machine. But then like there's a story about talking
pareidolia
to
that. That thing is talking.
Yeah.
Well, it was like, live on the radio, sir.
It did say weird stuff when we were talking. It was fun. It was like, you asked it, what should we eat if plants are conscious like this? And it said to eat air.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty funny.
It's pretty good. A comedian.
Yeah.
I heard there's a lot of writers on strike now. Oh, jeez. I just dated this goddamn thing. Pareidolia.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain a little bit about that term, that concept, and what that kind of means?
Well, I'm not a psychologist, and I don't know technically everything.
I thought you had a doctorate for your name.
But, like, you know, like, it's like seeing patterns in, like, noise and, like, you know, like like an ink blot test where it's like they have the ink that looks like a crab or what, you know, people see like a crab or a bat or like their mom or whatever, you know, in that same noise. And I think that is an interesting, and people use that as a like debunking excuse for what is happening. But I think it's like something to like sink into, like, why did that image come to you?
Yeah. Why did
you
saw that?
Like when you pull tarot cards, you can say it's fate for that card, but like what I think is interesting is like what that card makes you think of that like helps you reflect on that thing. You know, it's almost like, it's not exactly like pareidolia, but it's the same kind of thing. You felt some kind of thing when you saw that card.
Mm-hmm.
You made some connection in your head. Why is that the thing that you,
do you,
you know, your subconscious? It's like a way to tap into your subconscious, all this stuff, I think. And your intuition. Okay, I think that's what it's doing.
So you believe that, like, that what we are seeing is all of this is various ways that we're tapping into our consciousness, even if it is pareidolia. Someone using that to debunk something isn't really debunking it in your mind. As in, they're just describing, well, yeah, that pattern recognition is just another way to tap into, like, what your consciousness is, like divination of some sort.
Yeah. I mean, not always. I mean, I'm not discounting that people are really seeing things too, but yeah,
absolutely,
but,
you know, I don't.
But
think
this
you
is
are.
Just the
what
part
you're saying is like
I'm going into.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's helping. I mean, in a way, it doesn't matter if it's pareidolia or not because it's tapping into the same, whatever that is,
maybe
potentially. Yeah. Right. If for example, participating in this and agreeing to participate in it, like it's taking you to that door, just like the other thing, like the pattern that you saw that maybe is not paranormal, but brought you to that place where then here's the thing is like I get tripped up on and like I'm a little sensitive to, I think, is that are the people that just will use that to debunk everything, right? Here's pareidolia. That's all it is. There's nothing else here. I wonder what you think about that. Like, are you a person that when folks try to debunk things, just like, just nothing, does that irritate you? Or are you, you know, sort of not affected by it as much?
It's just not what I care about at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's value in that, especially like for me, who's like a scaredy cat. Like, I want to know sometimes, like, the real explanation for why, you know, not real, but like a scientific sound explanation for why I'm hearing growling outside or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I respect that. I think it's good. But it's just not, I don't care about it. Like, I'm not interested in, like, real, like, getting real evidence and, like, being, like, I'm more interested in from, like, a artistic or, like, like a mystical, you know, like, I don't care if it's real or not. I want it to, you know, I want it to be, I just want to have, I just want fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I don't, also don't. There are times when it's just like I cannot explain. Like I called you that one time when I was panicking. I don't know if you remember. I had this.
Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, this is during the pandemic, and I had went to this parking lot where there's the phone booth, and I had called the phone booth. I just picked up the phone booth, and there was no dial tone. So I was like, I'm gonna make a interdimensional phone call, and so I dialed a random number, and I was
as
like,
one would,
and I was like, hey, if there's any entities out there who want to make contact with me, like, I'm ready and waiting, you know, and I hung it up, and then, like, maybe I think it was like 14 days later, Bex and I went to this kind of abandoned cemetery, and we're out there doing, like, you know, talking Estes method, and we were like talking to the spirits there and all kinds of stuff. And this is at the time I'm doing the Dream Park and everything.
Yeah.
And
so you're like really.
Yeah. We were doing really all kinds of stuff. Yeah. But then like the next morning I woke up and this woman that I don't really know that well, I've never met her. She's on Twitter. I hadn't talked to her in like months. She's like, "Hey, I had a dream about you last night." I was like, "Oh, that's weird, because you know we're doing the Dream Park stuff, and yeah. she doesn't know anything about that." That I was like, "That's weird. She's having dreams about me. She's having random dreams about me too, and has no idea I'm doing this dream experiment." And she's like, "Yeah, I had this dream, and I was with my husband. I was driving through a cemetery, and I was trying not to hit any of the gravestones." And I was like, this is the next morning after Bex and I were in that cemetery and no one knew we were there.
Oh my gosh.
And then she's like, "I came over to your house and I was feeling sick. So you put something over my head, like a sheet, so I couldn't see anything. And then you put these headphones on my ears and they were playing all this like random noise and I couldn't understand what was happening. And then you were trying to talk to me through the headphones." And it was like mirroring everything that we had done the day before in that park.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what? Like, I get chills now thinking about, like, yeah, how did this person know we were doing all that? You know, or like those similarities, I could not make like a rational explanation for why, you know, because I just don't understand how that person.
Yeah.
You know, and it was the same, it was that night, you know, so I don't know. It was just like really weird to me. Like, it freaked me out. Like, because it felt to me like it was the answer to that phone call from that phone booth. Yeah. It was like, "I saw you in that cemetery yesterday, you know, like, I'm going to reply through this person who lives in Indiana."
Yeah, right.
Like, that was weird. That was just weird. I don't know. I don't know. It just made me, you know, because I play with this goofy stuff with like beaver spit, but you know, I'm like, haha, like LARPing paranormal stuff. And then like this happened, I'm like, whoa, I called you. I'm like, I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
Call me now.
Yeah. Yeah. In a gas station parking lot at the edge of town, the phone.
So was this working when you did it?
No, there's no dial tone when I did it.
And what did you do?
I just left a message for, I said, calling all entities or spiritual beings that.
Here, how did you do it?
And I just said, let's see. I don't know if I want to fucking call back from them now. It freaked me out so much last time. So if this is Garrett calling again, you got back to me about seeing me in the Seebeck Cemetery and returning your call. I just wonder if there's any spiritual beings or cryptids or entities that want to communicate with me and send a message back. This is me putting a call out for you, leaving an astral voicemail. I'm here and ready to receive your message. That's basically what I did. And then I hung up and then I waited a couple of days. I waited, I think it was 14 days. So I don't know if that's how long it takes to come back.
Right.
Or just slow to check their messages or what?
Right, right. There's a 14-day delay in voicemail receive.
Right. Do you want to? You should make your call now too.
Oh, okay. What should I say?
I don't know. Do you have a similar question? Or?
I'm reaching out to a multidimensional entity, perhaps.
I think so.
Jim, I am calling you to maybe touch base. I think you talked to my friend Garrett, who you maybe have sent a message through kind of space and time to be received only in the dream state. And it's interesting, and maybe you'll find this interesting, or maybe not. The first thing I thought of when I picked up this receiver was proof of life after death. I don't know what that means. I really don't even care much about that topic, but for some reason, that's just what I thought about. So, I don't think I need to receive proof of that, because that may involve something I am not comfortable with. Like, I do, like, please, maybe there's an abstract, artful way you could suggest why I picked up on that first thing. Thank you. I feel very vulnerable at this moment. But, thank you. I feel like I made a big mistake. I just immediately realized what I was asking for.
Uh-huh.
And that for proof of such things, is that going to require my death?
No, no. Definitely not.
Oh, man. I feel like I've really...
That's not the way.
Should I just make a call for a pizza instead? Oh, God.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
Well, because like you said, like you're a self-described scaredy cat.
Oh, big time.
I mean, yeah. Like, it's funny because I feel like you could comment on this if you want or not, but like to me, it feels like you are exercising a lot of that stuff through this spooky work. Mm-hmm. And like a part of it is like, I think, I don't know, like as your friend, I feel like some of this is therapeutic for you.
Right.
Because it's giving you a way to like kind of control a little bit what those fears are, don't you think?
Yeah, I have a recording actually of Amber and us talking about this. She's like, you like to be scared all the time. I'm like, no, I do not. And she's like, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess like you do all this stuff because it makes you make up this, you get to make up the story of what's happening. Mm-hmm. Instead of it like being confusing and like kind of controlling that, through fear, you know, like maybe that's why I'm so interested in like the like kind of storytelling aspect and the like imagination aspect of like being able to, I don't like where that bad trip's going. I'm going to reroute it and tell a new story from that. Instead of making it, you know, I'm not going to do the scary thing. So it's a way to wield it a little bit and like have some control. Cause I used to feel way out of control about it. Like I was nervous. We talked about this, but we saw the guy, the sightings, director.
Oh yeah.
And I told him like, you ruined my childhood. All those like alien videos.
Right. With those are the alien videos and stuff like that. And we were talking about sightings today in the car coming up here and about how things like that did affect us in our childhood so much. And, you know, I mean, what is fear, right? Like, I think for some people it is, I'll speak for myself. Fear for me is lack of control, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably why I'm straight edge and stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's a real fear of me. It's like losing a sense of control. And so when that's the so-called reality that we live in, right?
That's interesting. Because I feel like exactly the same. That is... fear of control. That's exactly how I would say it. Like I really terrified of that.
And I started the podcast because of that to like help try to figure out and put a lens to some of this stuff so I could understand some of it or maybe not. I don't know. Like you're enamored by sometimes what you're afraid of as well.
Yeah.
But dude, we weren't talking about like some of those fundamental images of, and I forgot to say this when I was talking to Whitley in his interview, but I wanted to say like, dude, come on, the communion cover. Why'd you do that to everyone?
Totally. Yeah.
Why'd you completely fuck us like that for our entire lives? You've made so many dumb podcasters like me and people making beaver spit potions and just because of your dumb book cover that we couldn't control. So I don't know, like, that resonates with me in terms of how to kind of find a space to control what your own narrative in this is. And I think it's really impressive and exciting to see you helping shape narratives where there isn't any, because what you're doing is you're creating a different form of paranormal reality in one that is, I guess, like more artful and expressive and open to exploration and not so scary. I mean, even with Liminal Earth's WUFO, when you guys do that, it has the ability to invite people into a process of trying to, you know, search for UFOs and stuff, but not in kind of a, Not in the way usually, like the tone that there usually is present.
Or like making cookies and stuff.
Yeah.
Doing that kind of thing. Yeah. And you know, we've been using AI for that too recently.
Oh my God.
So because I got really into these like solo role playing games.
Uh-huh.
Where it's kind of like the parking lot thing where it's like, mm-hmm. You know, use some dice to like kind of play this game, but you're kind of writing a story as you go along.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where the parking lot thing came mm-hmm. from. But so I saw someone using ChatGPT to be the dungeon master
mm-hmm.
in like a role-playing game. I was like, oh, well, we should do that for WUFO. We should have ChatGPT be the aliens or whatever mm-hmm. that we're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a whole session with like all the people, you know, all the people at home, and we're talking to like this entity in the Lynx constellation through ChatGPT, and part of the thing is that it would tell one of us specifically, okay, Jeremy, you roll dice and do like a magic sentence, or like now it's Garrett's turn to do like a tarot reading or whatever to like kind of tell weave the story. So mm-hmm. like ChatGPT was playing the role of the kind of entity for us.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that. We're trying to replicate the Philip experiment. Same thing where we're having Philip be the ghost. The ghost of Philip be ChatGPT. Like ChatGPT is like playing the role. And we did it the other day with John. Did it. And we were like, you know, talking to it, building the story with it, like trying to kind of replicate the experiment. And then we're trying to get it to knock in our houses. And there is like a weird, like it's all intentionally like fake and imaginary, like yeah. that we're coming up with. But then like there is this weird voice that comes through the recording that we're like, what?
Oh my gosh.
But so like, we got like weird results, even though we're totally goofing off, like, yeah. you know, and just using AI to yeah. do it all. So.
Tell me a little bit about Philip's experiment.
Yeah, this is like in the 70s, they had this experiment where they invented this fictional person, made up a whole backstory, and then they would have seances to try to communicate with it. And at first it didn't work. I think they did it for a long time, this little group. And then they started like, you know, really getting into the seance mode, I think, and really like playing. And it started like the table started, they'd have things where the table moved and real effect and like real, I think they got real like answers that were kind of like from Philip or whatever.
Yeah. Allegedly they had independent investigators go in and try to debunk yeah. the process and no one yeah. was able to. And
I mean, it's to me the same thing. It's like, it's fun, even mm-hmm. if it's not, I don't know the real science behind it, but
yeah.
but I like going into that. Let's just see what happens when yeah. we try that.
Do you think that you're a part of the problem with AI?
is that what you wrote down? yeah, I mean, I have tons of problems with the AI stuff.
You know, just like how you helped elect Donald Trump as president.
You're going to get into that? I think the AI stuff does have a lot of problems, like especially like the... There was like the people that were in charge of the trust and safety, you know, like dealing with like horrible content that was coming through.
Yeah.
Like, and they were farming it out to like African workers at really mm-hmm. low wages, and they have to see these disgusting images. And like, there's tons of issues with all of that.
Yeah.
And like, of course, all the problems with like artists and art. And
mm-hmm.
I do have issues with that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Probably am part of the problem though, because I think I want some of the thing. I like working with it, synthesizing mm-hmm. things in new ways, having it do. Like I love having it be our. It doesn't have to be AI. This doesn't have to do this, but I love that AI can like just make decisions about okay you.
Yeah,
I want you to do divination or whatever, like be this kind right. of leader that's independent of us.
Yeah, well, what's interesting about it is you're using it as a tool just as prominent parapsychologists do today with random number generation.
Mm-hmm.
You're using it as a random idea generator,
yeah.
you know, and I mean, how do you best experiment and test some of the stuff and play with it? Well, having that outside force really helps, because so much of it potentially is, you know, perhaps liable to suggestion, right? When you have that outside force, you do start tapping into something different, I think.
Yeah.
You know, like...
It's weird. It almost feels like a weird assistant that's there. Also, like, we've been using it to, like, oh, someone's doing, like, spirit box or whatever, and they're getting these words. And I'm like, hey, do you see any connections between these words? Mm-hmm. And, it will maybe see something that we are missing.
Yeah.
Or make some weird connection between things that we totally were. I think that's fun. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. I want to do more of that kind of thing. I'm interested in it for that sake. I think I'm not interested in it for like writing my essays or whatever, you know. But I like this. I like this aspect of it, because it is almost like it almost acts like pareidolia. It has seen patterns and mm-hmm. things and made conclusions. So yeah. Like,
how far do you think, this is an abstract question, but it's, and also like you're completely free to wildly speculate, so feel free. But how far do you think you're going to be able to take your experimentation with something like AI as it stands now? Do you have plans in the works right now for things that you want to try with it? And where do you think that goes as, you know, as its role on, you know, the study of the phenomenon?
Well, I think you've talked to me about some stuff.
I've given you an order to make me a paranormal AI assistant.
Yeah, actually, I'm on this waiting list, because you can actually give it like a spreadsheet of data.
Oh, fantastic.
And then like draw me some charts from this. And I really want, like, you know, here's all the entries from the liminal earth map. Here's mm-hmm. a bunch of stuff from, I don't know, MUFON or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, here, find some connections. You know, here's all the coal mines in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, find some connections between that, you know.
Yeah. I think that's where this stuff is really, yeah.
Code or, mm-hmm. you know, you can do this in minutes.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe it will see weird data that people are missing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the potential for that is really exciting.
Yeah. Do you find that you are, I mean, you're obviously an early adopter to some of this technology, and like by trade, you're a coder, right?
Yeah.
So does anyone in your, you know, sort of normal life, you know, at work and what do
I've
they
totally
think?
Had,
what do they
I've,
think
I've totally used AI to like make something uh-huh. work.
Before. But I mean, like, what do they think of like your pursuits? What do they think of liminal earth and your majestic majestic efforts here?
I'm going to have to plead the fifth on this one.
Really?
I think so.
Why? You don't. Yeah, but you haven't told people, or you have?
Oh, no, they know I do weird stuff, yeah.
But you don't think that the reception is, that there's not a warm reception towards it? Or they love it?
I mean, I think they think I'm weird. I don't know. I don't want to speak on their behalf about it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't
know. It's more about like not what they're saying about you. What's your feeling about it? Do you harbor? Well, I think a lot of us, like in our normal, like sort of, there's going to be a lot of people watching this now who have normal jobs that when they come in after they've seen something incredible or experienced something or made a potion, and they're going to feel like that they're not wanted or that they're out of place. And then a lot of these people probably find podcasts like
right.
this one or join Liminal Earth. I guess I'm wondering if like me, you ever have that feeling of insecurity around this or like, oh boy, maybe I'm on a different trip than these people in this room or.
Well, I think the fact that I do stuff with beaver spit and make weird TikToks is because it's a defense mechanism about really being interested in this stuff because people think you're weird. So at least it's like I'm going to make fun of myself a little bit in order to, you know, like be more of a clown in a way. In order to feel more comfortable about it. But also I am interested in this stuff. So I think it's like one of my defense mechanisms for like feeling awkward.
Yeah.
I don't know. So
yeah, it's probably not something that you actively also think about in every day, right? Cause you're you're doing your thing, you know?
Right.
And I don't know, like I would suggest to you as your friend that how you present is never in that way. You present as always someone that is just authentically yourself. So I never like read you as like, maybe this is a defense mechanism for this dude. That's why he's like in this phone booth at 5 a.m. for TikTok.
No, but
it's more like this dude's making art. This is great.
But yeah,
but I do understand. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Don't mean
I feel the same
way.
Be a
downer, but I think just you talking about it made me think that maybe that is why I do that. You know, like I think I would use humor in moments, sometimes inappropriately when I felt like nervous about something. So I think that is like why this is. You know, I dress up like a shrimp sometimes because I want people. The other thing is, I want people to feel like comfortable, like they cannot be too weird when they talk to me about their story. Like,
yeah.
I'm already doing weird stuff. You're not going to out-weird me, you know? So, like, don't, you can feel comfortable coming, talk to the shrimp. Maybe that's a bad thing, too, sometimes. Like, I have a really serious story. I'm not going to talk to that shrimp guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that, that is kind of like I want to give off that.
Well, one thing aura. You do, but you take like what you do take very seriously amongst all of that play is that you want to have people having that same feeling as you.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, you're not going to outweird me. Don't worry about it. We're all on the same team here.
Right.
And you can get weird and you can do art and you can be yourself. And that's what one of
I really want. Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that was just my first impression of meeting you. And I think how we became fast friends is because I immediately saw someone that was as weird as me, potentially, if not maybe even slightly weirder. And that was reassuring to me because then I was able to tap into a weirder part of myself and create a time traveling museum.
That was amazing.
So, but what were you going to say?
Okay. I was thinking about how in high school, like some of my best memories were with my friends. They came up with this, but it was basically we'd go out at night, they'd flip a coin, and it would tell us which direction to go. Or we had a Xandar crystal ball that we would, you know, wave your hand over from like a board game.
Yeah.
And it would tell you yes or no answers. And we would just go and we were like, we're going on a mystical journey and like whatever it tells us to do. And weird stuff would always happen. Like we have this like mindset and I'm constantly chasing that feeling. Mm-hmm. Like they like blew my mind when we did this. And it was goofing off with your friends, but that if you get into that mindset and that mode, I was always surprised at the crazy stuff that would happen. So yeah. I just want other people to know that they can do that. And I want to do more, show that and do more of it. That's like my main motivation.
I think it's awesome, man.
Like that's like really what I'm. If I could be in that state, you can't be in that state as much, but I want to be in that state as much as possible. It's like my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
All right. CQ, CQ, Whiskey India 5, Hotel Echo Romeo. This is Wisher. WI5HER, CQ.
Made of PVC pipe, tape measures, and a ham radio, Garrett and I use a homemade antenna gun to shoot signals at Venus, with the only contact being made that night between two friends reconnecting under a starry sky. And I think that's the point.
What's up?
CQ, Whiskey India 5, Hotel Echo Romeo. This is Whiskey India 5, Hotel Echo Romeo, CQ, CQ. This is Garrett in Bremerton. Please come back.